Have you ever wondered what it's like to experience something paranormal, supernatural, or unexplainable? Join host Jack Wagner on the podcast Otherworld as he explores spine-chilling real stories shared by everyday people who have experienced something unexplainable. Listen each week for first-person testimony from people who have come face-to-face with something that can't just be explained away. Listen and follow Otherworld, an Odyssey podcast, available now on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Well, the Derek Shelton Show is brought to you by your local Parmore stores. Remember, if there's not a Parmore store near you now, there will be soon. And we welcome in the manager of the Pirates, Derek Shelton, for his weekly appearance. And Derek, I mean, some guys, they seem to have a very cushy life, as it's just me again this week, as Joe is off again.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, what's going on here? I mean, I've been doing this show for 5 years, and I listened to Starkey talk about Cook. Did he just, like, transform into his contract where he works, like, one day a week? I mean, it's crazy.
I'm starting to believe it because I'm looking at the schedule saying, wait a minute. This is the Starkey show, and I'm doing all these solo shows for him. But this is about the third week in a row. You haven't been blessed with his presence, and so hopefully...
Well, I don't know. You can use that term very, very loosely in terms of blessed with his presence. The situation that's going to run into is that we're going to do this show a week from now or 2 weeks from now, and he's going to want to recap like a whole month, and we should not allow him to do that. He can't ask like questions from things that happened like 3 weeks ago if he's not going to attend the. If he's not going to attend the show.
Absolutely. I completely agree. Well, we start with, there are a lot of questions. And, of course, before you come on, we put some questions out to, we allow texters to text us some questions for you that they have. And the one that seems to be pressing on most people's minds is, do you know what your pitching rotation is going to be like the next 4 or 5 days? I know you've got some guys hurt and you've got some guys to move around, and I'm looking at, and I don't have the official game notes in front of me, but I have the online version of what, and it looks like there's a couple of holes in your pitching rotation. So can you update us on that?
Yeah. Well, Fleming's going to open for us today, and then I think we'll kind of go from there. And then we have Perez and Skeens. Ortiz will make another start in the Chicago series with where we're going, and then Mitchell pitch. We do have the one day open, and we have not decided yet. I think we have a bunch of different options. You know, we have some people in the minor leagues. We have some people on rehab. We could bullpen day again, but I think, you know, Louis will definitely get another start. He's pitched really well. Mitch will get another start. Skeens and Perez, obviously. You know, today we'll go with Flem and then go from there. But we do have the one day that we have to fill, and I think we're going to try to get through, you know, the Milwaukee series and see where we're at, and then we can have a better idea of making a decision on what we're going to do.
Well, if Ortiz is going to be a starter, which by the way he's earned the right because he's pitched really well, will that mean you have to maybe back up Fleming tonight with a couple of guys, as opposed to, you know, being able to go Fleming and then Ortiz hopefully covers 5 or 6 innings?
Yeah, we could do that. I mean, there's a possibility we could add someone in that spot too today to make sure we have a bulk role. And then I think the big one's going to be the day in Chicago, just seeing where we're at. And I think to your point, Louis's done a really good job. He deserves another start. I mean, he's pitched well. And we're going to come off the break, and, you know, at some point we're going to get Jared back. We're going to get Bailey back. Marco Gonzalez is out on rehab right now, and he will be back. You know, Barucci's out on rehab. Bednar's out on rehab, although, you know, those guys aren't going to start. But I think our pitching over the course of the next couple weeks, there's a possibility of a lot of different moving parts that you know, could kind of adjust us.
So would you anticipate Marco Gonzalez could be back before the break, or do you anticipate probably after the break?
Yeah, I think we would anticipate more after the break. I mean, he has a scheduled start on Friday in Indianapolis. So just kind of see how he feels coming off his last start. I mean, it was four and a third, I think, 60-plus pitches. And I think we'll have to see where our pitching's at too, how he's feeling. I mean, there's so many factors that come into play when you're making those decisions.
Well, obviously, there's no question. You have so many guys, and as you said, moving parts. You have Quinn Priester down. Beyond him, Derek, do you have a couple of other options beyond him that you feel like are guys that could help you from the minor leagues if you get into a pinch and maybe some of these guys don't get back as quickly as you anticipate?
Yeah, well, I mean, I think, you know, we have in our Triple-A rotation, we have Domingo Germán, we have Ashcraft. You know, we have different options, and that's not saying those are guys that we're going to go to, but we do have options of people that are either on our roster, have pitched in the big leagues, and then, you know, you have Marco, like you said, you have Priester. So our pitching depth has been hit a little bit when you lose two starters like that, but I do feel that we have other people down there that, you know, if we get into a position that we need to go get, we definitely have the ability to go get.
Yeah, the one thing that, and I think you were talking about this, maybe it was Ben Sherrington the other day, was that when it comes to pitching injuries, you guys, I mean, every team has plans to try and keep these guys healthy. You all have rest programs. You have recovery programs. Obviously, you have the technology with workouts and stuff like that. But at the end of the day, I mean, guys are going to get injured. It's just one of those things where you can't, you know, have a 100% foolproof plan, right?
No, there's no foolproof plan. And I think if any team had figured that out, then there wouldn't be pitching injuries for that organization. And we're seeing it throughout the game now in every organization. And I know at times we've done things where we've given guys rest or we've skipped or, you know, we've bulked guys. I think we're trying to do what we feel is best. And to say that's 100% right, I don't think that's fair because we don't have all the answers. You know, we're learning every day. And then, you know, it's situations where you see guys pitch for X amount of years and never get hurt, and then they get hurt, and you see guys never get hurt, or you see guys get hurt multiple times. I don't think anybody has the right answer to this, and we're going to continue to try to figure out what's best for the Pirates as we move forward with pitching. But, you know, I think Ben made the point the other day, and he's 100% right. Like, you can never have enough pitching depth, and, you know, we're getting tested a little bit on that right now.
The last week, I mean, obviously you finished on a high note by beating the Mets yesterday, but overall your homestand was 3-4. You were against two teams that you were kind of, you know, that you're kind of trailing in the standings. Do you guys, you know, see that as sort of a missed opportunity? I mean, I know it's such a long season, you probably don't break it down the way that those of us on the outside do, but do you kind of see it as sort of a missed opportunity when you had an opportunity to gain some ground on some teams?
Yeah, we did have an opportunity. I mean, I think you take out the first St. Louis game, the first out against St. Louis game, we played really well. I mean, we won a game in a walk-off, we lost a game in extra innings. I mean, I think the one that you know, is a little bit, you know, frustrating or hurts a little bit was Sunday. We were one pitch away from winning, and then, you know, we would end up winning that Mets series 3-4, you know, because the first night we really swung the bats well, and then yesterday we bounced back. But I think the game that kind of sits in my crawl a little bit over that series is the Sunday game, because we battled back and got two in the eighth off Diaz, and then just were not able to finish it.
Well, and I think, you know, that was – obviously, you went to Chapman in the ninth. It just looked, you know, again, from afar, it just looked like he couldn't really locate the strike zone, and that's when he sort of gets in trouble, right, when he starts walking guys or when he's a little bit wild.
Yeah, and I mean, you know, it's we've seen it in situations where he hasn't had command of the strike zone at all. I mean, in this one, he had command until two strikes and then just was not able to finish guys. And I think that's the frustrating thing is we started – you know, we started the inning with an 0-2 count to Alvarez and ended up walking him. I mean, then we're 1-2 to Iglesias, one pitch away from getting out of it after he punched out the Vientos and Torrens, the pinch hitter. And we get a 1-2 count, and we couldn't get the last strike. And I think that's what was, you know, the thing that was the most frustrating.
Yeah, and then when you have to, you know, when you have to take him out of the game, that obviously – maybe changes some of your plans for the next day, right? Because you got to use a guy that you anticipated using.
Yeah, in normal states it would. And then yesterday, I mean, we were very fortunate because Mitch gave us eight strong. So we were able to save our bullpen with the exception of Honeywell because we were able to add on runs late. But, yeah, I think that plays a large part in it that you end up having to use people you don't want to use.
Right. I mean, that's a big thing. I mean, the other thing that happened, I think it was in that game, was you had Mike Away, Taylor, you left the bunt sign on with two strikes, and I think it happened a couple of times over the weekend. That's obviously, it didn't work out, so it's something that we're going to talk about, you know, and in the world of talk radio. From your perspective, do you kind of feel like he's good enough in those situations that you trusted he would be able to get a bunt down even with two strikes?
Yeah, I mean, we have to execute in those situations. I mean, you know, Jack gets the pinch hit, base hit, and, you know, fortunately in that situation, we end up scoring two runs. I mean, Kutch had a base hit, and then Brian had a really good at bat, and we scored two runs in that inning. But, I mean, those are situations that we have to execute, especially with guys at the bottom of our order.
Yeah, I mean, like I said, I think that's one of those things where, he did it twice, so of course it becomes magnified. Overall, you've got, I don't know, something maybe like you got these six games and then maybe another, 12 to 14 or whatever until the trade deadline. I know in years past with the Pirates, they've basically said, you know, that they would wait until up to the trade deadline to see, you know, how you're going to sort of move forward. And given that and where you're at in the standings, do you kind of feel like you have to make a move in the standings over the next, you know, 15 to 16 games to sort of show the front office that, you know, maybe they need to go and give you some help?
Well, I think our front office is always talking. I mean, and they've, you know, I'm very aware that they have been talking over the last 2 weeks, 3 weeks about things that can help our club make us better. I know Ben's always focused on that. The fact that everybody's so bunched up, I think the next 2 or 3 weeks are going to be important and to see where it is. I do think the other thing is the climate of the trade deadline, because of the fact that so many people are bunched up, it's going to be one that's challenging because the asking prices could be different when you have seven or eight teams. So I think we have to make sure that we do what's best for us. And if we have the ability to add to our group in a way that we feel is best for our organization, we will do that. And I know Ben is always out there, you know, having those conversations and has been having those conversations. And, you know, we haven't seen a lot of activity yet, not only with the Pirates, but within the game. So it's going to be interesting to see how the next 2 weeks play out.
Well, I mean, like I said, there have been times when the Pirates have surged right before the trade deadline and the front office went out and got some guys. And then there have been times when they, you know, struggled. And so they were able, they sold some assets. I think your team is in a little bit of a different situation from the standpoint of there are probably a couple of guys that you could, you know, to use the phrase, sell off. Wouldn't necessarily be, you know, like selling or giving up on the season, but would bring back some assets that might help you win. I mean, is that a tricky line sort of to toe?
I think it's a tricky line, but I think the bottom line ultimately is whatever's going to make our team better is, you know, the way that we're going to approach it. So, you know, it's a situation where you number one, you have to have two to tango in terms of what you're going to do. But the second thing is if we feel we can make our team better, then I'm sure Ben is going to be willing to listen.
Yeah. Now there was a report from John Parada that says that Ben's basically been told that there's no from above that there's no money to add players to have. Is this something that the climate is, or what are your thoughts on that?
My thoughts are, and it's been the same way that I've been in the 5 years I've been here, that every conversation that Ben has had within the group, that we've had, you know, ability to make our team better. And that's the way it's been consistent. That's the conversations we've had. That's the way that we will continue to operate. So I think, you know, in Ben's case, he has the ability to make our team better if he feels fit. And if that is the case, you know, I trust that we will do that. I mean, we've made, you know, I mean, I think you look like you're talking about trades. I mean, we got Colin Holderman a couple years ago in a good trade for us for Daniel Vogelbach. Like, you know, I mean, we're talking about one of the better leverage relievers in the game. And Ben made a really good move there. So I think if we have the opportunity to make us better and Ben likes the deal, then we will do it.
You had two guys that were named to the All-Star game. Obviously, Paul Skeens, is what he is, and Reynolds is being rewarded for an incredible season, or at least an incredible 7 weeks. I mean, he's had a good season, but the last 7 weeks, he's been on a different planet. When you look at Skeens, you've been around the game a long time. I mean, a rookie like that, and there's discussion that he might actually start the game. Can you kind of put into proper perspective how good he's been so soon?
Well, we're seeing something that's historic that was happening. I mean, I think he was drafted on, July 9th of last year, and on July 7th this year we found out, or whatever. I don't know if the dates are right, that he's made the All-Star game. It's something that's never happened in the history of the game, especially with a 1-1. I think it just speaks to, how good a job that our baseball ops group did in terms of identifying he was the guy to get. And then, a guy, to your earlier point, we talk a lot about pitching and pitching development. And I know people were critical of what we did with him early in the year, but we needed to make sure he was healthy to get to the big leagues. And we needed to make sure that he was going to have the innings once he got here and he was going to be able to pitch. And I think as he's been here, he's pitched seven innings three or four times. And, he's done a really good job. So it's surprising because you'd never seen it happen, but this kid's extremely talented. And I mean, he's special. And I think we're seeing something that's really special that's happened. And he's very deserving to be in the All-Star game.
No, absolutely. I mean, and Reynolds, he, the month of June that he had, where he, it was a 25, 26 game hitting streak, where there were some games where you just couldn't pitch to him. And it seems like he's continued. I mean, it's not like he's cold off. Is this just sort of a player that really now is really starting to come into his own?
Yeah, I think he deserves to be an All-Star. I mean, if you look at his numbers compared to other National League outfielders, in most major categories, he's going to rank in the top five. If you rank in the top five in offensive categories, you deserve to be an All-Star. And I think what we're seeing with Brian is just the steadiness. He got off to a little bit of a rough start and then bounced back the month of June. I mean, every at bat, it seemed like he was locked in. I mean, even, he, after the streak ended, I think he went 2 days without a hit and then, is back to having multiple good at bats. I mean, the inning that started yesterday when we got five runs with two outs, nobody on, and, he walks to start that and start a two out rally. So yeah, I mean, the things that separate him is why he's an All-Star.
You had a couple other guys that you thought might be able to make a case for All-Star. Mitch Keller is one that has been talked about. He's clearly had a good season. Was there any other guys that you thought might have gotten a shot?
Well, yeah, I think I pointed out, I think Holderman's been one of the better leverage relievers in the game. I mean, I know he's had a tough last couple outings, but he really has had he's really had a good season, and that's a hard position to make it in. I mean, you have to be extremely elite. There's very few leverage relievers that make the club. And then in Mitch's case, I mean, honestly, and I've said it publicly over the last couple of days, I think, when we talk about snubs are overlooked, I definitely think he's overlooked. I mean, he has 10 wins before the break. I mean, what he did yesterday, going out and throwing eight strong innings, that's what All-Stars do. I mean, he's actually got better numbers than he had last year when he made the All-Star team. So, understand that there's a lot of good pitchers in the National League, and not showing any disrespect towards them, but I really feel strongly that Mitch Keller should have been an All-Star this year.
When you look at what Rowdy Tellez has done, can you remember in recent history somebody who's had such an incredibly dramatic change? Not only was he a guy who was struggling at the plate, he had the situation where early in the season where he jumped in on a Bednar thing and basically, told fans they shouldn't boo, which put a target on his back. And so when he was struggling, he was getting booed and all that other stuff, to now where he's one of your best hitters. And also he's a fan favorite that's getting curtain calls and having people, chant his name and all that stuff. Can you, I am having a hard time remembering somebody who so quickly and so dramatically changed the narrative on himself like he has.
No, I do think it's a rare thing, and you know, it's honestly a very cool thing, because to your point, I mean, a month and a half ago, people were booing him, and they, you know, every chance they got. And then I do think that they, you know, kind of lifted him on their back the one game where they started to chant and he hit the homer, and since then he's taken off. And I think the one biggest thing about it is Rowdy never changed. You know, he never changed. He was always accountable to what was going on, to the fact that he was struggling. He continued to work. And the thing that stands out is I think our fans appreciated that. You know, I mean, you know, they were frustrated with the performance, and Rowdy was frustrated with the performance, and so were we, but he never changed. And I really appreciate that our fans kind of have noticed that, stayed with him, and now, you know, they're supporting him, because, I mean, he's a guy that you root for. He's a guy that gives it every day, and, you know, throughout every single month this year, regardless of where he's going, he stayed the same guy.
Last one, Derek, as long as I can remember, Milwaukee has been a place where you guys have just, it's been sort of like the Pirates' kryptonite has been playing in Milwaukee. What is it about that place that's made it so difficult for you guys to, you know, in particular? And what do you got to do to try and reverse that?
Yeah, well, I think the thing that's been the toughest for us is their pitching has been so good for so long. I mean, they've really done a good job of developing young pitchers, having good young starters. So, you know, we need to get in here today. We need to get after Colin Ray and get this road trip off to a good start.
Derek, thank you so much. Hopefully next week Joe will be off the golf course and maybe will join us. If not, I guess we'll do it again next week, just you and I.
All right. Sounds good. Have a great week.
All right. There you go. It's Derek Shelton, Pirates manager. Again, he answers every question you want answered. Regardless if you like his answers or not, he answers every question that you're going to ask him. And that's what I always appreciate.
Have you ever wondered what it's like to experience something paranormal, supernatural, or unexplainable? Join host Jack Wagner on the podcast Otherworld as he explores spine-chilling real stories shared by everyday people who have experienced something unexplainable. Listen each week for first-person testimony from people who have come face-to-face with something that can't just be explained away. Listen and follow Otherworld, an Odyssey podcast, available now on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
About him. Well, we had Derek Shelton on. He obviously gave us a little bit of a blueprint of where they are going to go with the pitching rotation. Tonight is Josh Fleming, who will start, you know, as the opener role. And then it sounds like, and, you know, I actually didn't follow up, so this was all my bad, but he wouldn't have told us anyway. But it sounds like they're going to bring somebody up to sort of be the long guy today, the long reliever guy or whatever you want to call it, because they can't use Ortiz because they have Ortiz starting, what is it, Thursday, I think, or whatever day he's going to be starting. So he can't be the long reliever guy. And so I think that... That's where they're at right now. Obviously, they've got some challenges just because they've got some injuries. Now, the good news is all of these guys are going to be coming back after the All-Star break for the most part. Jared Jones will be out a little bit longer, but I would expect Bednar and Gonzalez and maybe even Falter to be back before the trade deadline. The problem is, you know, as we talked, it sounds interesting. It sounds interesting enough like, you know, Shelton and company understand that if they're going to be able to add or they're going to want to add or whatever, they need to get in gear and win some games. And that's going to be difficult with so many of your key starting pitchers and everything else on the DL. So it could be a situation of where they get a whole bunch of guys back and it might be a little too late. But nevertheless, you know, I asked him, and I asked him 100% the question about the John Parado report, and he basically said that Ben Cherington is always looking to add, and is always, if there's something that can make the team better, he's always got the authorization to make it add to go make a move. And so, I mean, whether you know you believe him or not, that is really, you know, his answer. And again, we can argue all day whether he's, you know, being truthful or not. But you got to remember, the one thing about it is, I mean, he's got bosses, and so he's not obviously gonna, rip his boss. I mean, there's a lot of people out there who basically think that just because you ask the quote unquote tough questions, you're gonna get the tough answer. Well, all these guys have bosses they have to answer to. And so even if they don't agree with what's going on, or they don't, you know, agree with maybe some things that have been told to them, you know, at the end of the day, they're going to toe the company line because they like their job. That's how the world works. Not just in sports, everywhere. People toe the company line because they like their job. They like to work. So if you're upset because you feel like Derek Shelton just kind of gave us the company line, well, yeah, that's what he does, because he likes to work. He likes his job, and I don't blame him. I don't understand a lot of times where people who act like they don't know how this world works. Well, that's sort of how the world works, isn't it? You like your job. You want your job, you know, you want to make sure that your boss is happy. So you're not going to go out on a limb or whatever. 412-928-9370 is the number. We can take some phone calls, actually, if you want to talk about the John Perotta report that basically says that Bob Nutting has told the front office that there's no money to spend to add players this year. Don't know that anyone's really all that surprised by it. 50-minute mark on the Fan, brought to you by South Hills Chrysler Jeep Dodge, Route 19, Peters Township, celebrating 50 years in the South Hills. Also, it's a Chevy Summer Drive at Sun Chevrolet, up to $7,500 in rebates. Terms and conditions at sunchevy.com. Hive 91 today with cloudy skies. And 412-928-9370 is the number if you want to talk about the Pirates. And the fact that Bob Nutting apparently, even though publicly, he said publicly that they're going to add if they have to, and they're going to go out and get players, and they're going to make the team better. But apparently privately, he's saying something different, allegedly. And again, there's no reason to doubt John Perotta. I mean, the guy's been around baseball for, you know, I forget what it is, 40 years. He's got great sources and all that other stuff. But of course, publicly, they're saying one thing. Privately, they're saying another thing. And so, City Limits, let me know if we have any callers.
We do. We got a couple.
Okay. Well, let's get right to the phones then. 412-928-9370. And let me start off with who are we starting off with?
Anthony in Oakland.
All right, Anthony. How you doing, buddy?
I called you guys last week and said Bob Nutting was lying to everyone. And it's unfortunate. And I think Major League Baseball needs to investigate this franchise, because this is just a malaise, man. They're not competitive. This is just an embarrassment. But that's not why I really called you, Paul.
Yeah.
I called you about the Cam Sutton thing, because once I heard the news, I called some of my sources to work with the Players Association. And here's exactly why he got eight games. When the incident first happened, he left Florida. He comes to the facility in Detroit, and their sources tell him that there's a warrant for his arrest to stay here, and they will turn him in. Well, he leaves the facility at that point and then cooperate, and went missing for a week or two. So the league, if it would have just been the domestic violence, he would have got 4 games, probably 3, because he was a first-time offender. They added 8 because they gave it for 2 offenses. First, the domestic violence that he pled guilty to. Secondly, he did not cooperate with the team, and that's why they immediately cut him. If you remember, they cut him immediately because he was told to wait at the facility, and he left. He walked out without response. So job abandonment, that's what they called it. So that's why he got more severe than usual. And Go ahead. I'm sorry.
Well, no, I said, I mean, it makes sense. Like I said earlier, I thought, I figured the fact that he was abandoned or that he was away for, the, you know, 30 days or he was on the run, that probably added to what the actual suspension was.
Yes. And see, when you have an obligation by your contract. Once the Lions got from Florida that they were looking for him, he should have waited at the facility. The Michigan police would have turned him over and that would have been it, but he walked off the job, and you remember they released him immediately by his collective bargaining agreement. He has to cooperate if his team tells him something in that manner.
There's no question about it.
So let me just say what I'm upset with him about. He should have allowed the union to file a grievance stuff. He should have, and they do that for. They don't like precedents to be started. He shouldn't have just taken this 8 games. He should have fought for what happened, and maybe it was reduced because he was a first-time offender. He's never had even a traffic violation. So they're shocked that they don't know where he's getting the advice. But he should have listened to the union, which always tell you to appeal, especially since it's not in just Goodell's hands anymore. It goes right to outside arbitrator. So. I don't know who's giving him advice. I wouldn't have done that if I was his rep.
Yeah, well, I appreciate it, Anthony. I mean,
okay,
again,
man.
Yeah, I appreciate it. I mean, again, I think it's one of those situations where the Steelers kind of knew what they were getting into, and so it's not like they, you know, went into it with their eyes closed. They understood. So the larger issue is the 8 games. What does it mean when it comes to? What does it mean when it comes to the Steelers at corner? And we talked with Brian Bacco about that. Okay, who's up next, City Limits?
We've heard from him a lot lately, Doc in Claysville.
Hey, Doc, how you doing, buddy?
Hey, Paul, doing real good, thanks. Want to talk a couple things about yesterday's great win. First of all, Mitch did a great job there on the mound, and of course, you mentioned it earlier, Reynolds worked the walk to start the big rally. But the big thing I want to talk about today is how Rowdy has turned it around. First of all, he's been playing great defense all season. I mean, he saved a couple games just with his glove. I mean, he's like almost like Keith Hernandez over there. And the other thing is, he started the big rally. He legged out a little, I don't know, just a little slow grounder. And then the next guy hit a liner down the right field line, and the right fielder for the Mets misplayed it, and the race was on. The right fielder's running to get the ball, and Rowdy's running second on the way to third, and he's just watching his coach, and the expression on his face, Rowdy's face, said, "You're going to send me home," because Rowdy didn't know what was going on in the outfield. So he said, "Well, I'm going to go home." He goes home, and it was great play to score another run. And that was, I like it's neat. Now they're shouting out his name, you know, Rowdy, you know.
Right.
And so that's all I think I wanted to ask. Oh, one other thing. Williams is not on the team, right?
Alika Williams?
Utility guy.
Yeah.
He's not on a team, right?
No, not right now, no.
They should bring him up some way, get him on that team, because I figure it's going to be like the rest of the season. One run, two runs, wins games. And that guy, Leeson, is out of buttons, put a ball down on the ground, you know, so I think that'd be nice if they bring him back.
Well, thank you, Doc. I appreciate the call. We could live without a legal. I mean, first of all, you're going to take Nick Gonzalez off the field, a guy who might actually hit the ball out of the park, guy who might hit the ball, you know. And here's the thing about Nick Gonzalez, I'll say this. If you look at the Pirates statistically, the thing that impresses me probably the most is Nick Gonzalez is really good at, when guys are on base, getting them home. And you look, he's got 190 at-bats, and he's third on the team in RBI at 31. It's more than Rowdy Tellez, more than Connor Joe, more than McCutcheon, right? More than Sawinski. All those guys have more, and in some cases a lot more at-bats than him. More than Triolo, way more than Ke'Bryan Hayes. I mean, really, Reynolds and Cruz are the only two guys that drive in runs more than he does. And that's because he's got the ability to drive the ball a little bit. And again, 190 at-bats, he's fourth on the team in doubles. And he's, what is he here, like one, two, three, four, he's like, he's got five home runs, so he's like sixth or seventh on the team in home runs. But it's good to see a young guy like that whenever we talk about hitters, you know, on the team that haven't necessarily been developed in this organization. One guy that looks like he might be, you know, on his way is Gonzalez. One of the things I'll say about him, his slugging percentage is .420. I mean, for what he is, he probably needs to get his on-base percentage up a little bit. And if he does that and his OPS is somewhere in 780 to 810, 820 range, I think, you know, he's going to be a good player for them for a long, long time. He's just got to cut down on his strikeouts. He struck out a ton, really, for what he is. And you know, walk more. And if he can do that, I mean, Nick Gonzalez has 49 strikeouts, 9 walks. If he can get those numbers closer to the middle, you know, that adds to his on base and whatnot. I think he becomes much closer to the guy they envisioned when they drafted him in the first round. City Limits, you got anyone else?
Hello?
Ed, Richie.
You got Richie?
Yeah.
Hello. Okay, what do you got for me?
I like to talk about the Pirates. There's really no point in them making a trade or anything because they're going to shut down Skeens and everybody else at the end of the season, maybe August. So what's the point of even doing that? But I would make a trade. If I was making a trade, I wouldn't trade any prospects. I would trade Ke'Bryan Hayes for a starting player. Surely somebody wants a player with a gold glove. And don't laugh, but I would also get rid of, like, O'Neill Cruz. He's too inconsistent. Surely somebody would give a package for a big freak player like that. And the other thing, Sawinski, I'm so tired of looking at him. I trade him to Colorado. Isn't that where he hits the best?
So, well, you're not, you probably can't give up on O'Neill Cruz. Can't give O'Neill Cruz because he's sort of that unicorn player that if he really continues to develop and develops into what they think he is, I mean, he gives you a superstar player that you could never afford if he wasn't on, like, his younger deals.
Yeah, but he's not a superstar player. He's really inconsistent. He hits, what, 2 home runs a month or something. Makes all kind of mistakes. You know? I would rather have a I mean, you could get a really good package for him. Like, okay. You would hope.
Well, I mean, I think if you look at what he's doing, though, in recent weeks, he's started to hit more.
Yeah, he has been better.
Yeah.
That's better. Oh, and another thing I wanted to say, if the Pirates were really serious about anything, they would get the Trevor Bauer. I heard you mention it several times. What are they waiting for? They got pitchers down. Here's one of the best ones around. Bring him up.
Yeah.
Don't cost him anything.
Well,
I know he's blackballed or something. But
yeah, I appreciate the call. I mean, I think the thing about Trevor Bauer, but they've made it pretty clear they're not going to do that. They made it pretty clear organizationally that they're not going to do that. Now, I'll be shocked if there's not a team that does that. Because when you look at the price of pitchers, and you look at the price of, you know, players at the trade deadline, you know, everything we've heard of or everything we've heard about has been basically that the price is going to be really stiff because there's so many teams bunched up and it's going to be a seller's market and all that other stuff. Well, if that's the case, if that is the case, and it's going to cost lots of money, I would tell you this. You have to make sure that if you're one of these teams that maybe doesn't have quite the capital to go out and make a trade, that you basically go get a guy like Trevor Bauer, who all you got to do is sign him for $1 million or $2 million or whatever it's going to cost you. You go get him and you put him in your rotation. For the Pirates, though, organizationally, they have made it very clear they're just not interested in that. And I know there's baggage with them, and we talked about sort of the balance when it comes to Cam Sutton, for instance, with the same kind of issue. But you have to do your sort of due diligence and kind of take a look at his background and his history and all that other stuff, because some of what he was accused of has sort of gone away. Some of the things that he was allegedly accused of doing or whatever, I mean, he was exonerated on. And so, yeah, I mean, would it make sense for them to go get Trevor Bauer now? Not unless they really are going to be serious about trying to do a whole lot of other things. And if they're going to do a whole lot of things to try and make themselves better, try and get to the playoffs, well then, yeah, I guess, you know, going out and getting Trevor Bauer would make some sense. But for them, it doesn't. And like I said, as an organization, they don't want to touch him with a 10-foot pole, it doesn't seem. The time to go get him was a month ago or 2 months ago or whatever. But at this point, the closer that you get to the trade deadline, and this is one of my pet peeves with the Pirates this year, one of the things about the Pirates this year that has really, really just been annoying is it's felt like they have just been sort of trying to run out the clock, get to the trade deadline somewhere where they're at right now, right around 500, and be able to say, well, we don't think that this is the year for us to go for it. And if that's what they're doing, then getting Trevor Bauer would be just sort of a waste. The other thing is, you're not going to trade O'Neill Cruz. You want to tell me you want to trade Sawinski? There's a lot of people that say he's young. He still could be going. He still could be getting better and has got a lot of potential. And he's a left-handed bat that can hit home runs and all that stuff. I wouldn't mind if they traded. I mean, I don't care one way or the other with him. But no way are you trading O'Neill Cruz. For one thing, you're not going to get back anything at all. Anything at all. You're not going to get anything at all that comes close to replacing what he could potentially be. I'm willing to take a shot at, listen, O'Neill Cruz has a chance to be a unicorn. And that's the most important thing, is you've got a guy who could be a superstar level player. And a lot of other teams don't. And so you're not going to get rid of him or move on from him or whatever. You're just not going to do that. Because if he becomes that guy, now all of a sudden you have a superstar that you're not paying like a superstar. And that's always the situation the Pirates need to be in. Down the road, if he develops into a superstar, yeah, you're probably going to have to trade him at some point because you're not going to be able to pay him that second contract. But right now, it would make absolutely zero sense to trade him. Again, I've been pretty open-minded with the Pirates on guys that they could trade. And, you know, City Limits, you and I have had a back and forth when it comes to Mitch Keller. But at the end of the day, you can agree with me that you don't trade O'Neill Cruz.
No, I mean, he is just too special of a talent that you would have to that it would give up on him. And right. the defense isn't great, but the power bat is in there to the point of, and this is a bad comparison, his ceiling is probably around a similar ceiling of a Paul Skeens in terms of the level of impact that he can have in one specific area of your team. Skeens on the mound and in the rotation and being your horse, Cruz and being a guy who can hit 30-plus home runs and drive in 100 runs, which you don't have outside of Brian Reynolds, who hasn't driven in 100 runs yet in his career.
Right. That's the biggest thing, I think. I think the biggest thing is you, if you have him, Skeens and Cruz, over the next 3 years, and both really become the guys that we think they are, it shouldn't be that hard to build a team around them that wins, should it?
It shouldn't.
Yeah. Anyway.
Have you ever wondered what it's like to experience something paranormal, supernatural, or unexplainable? Join host Jack Wagner on the podcast Otherworld as he explores spine-chilling real stories shared by everyday people who have experienced something unexplainable. Listen each week for first-person testimony from people who have come face-to-face with something that can't just be explained away. Listen and follow Otherworld, an Odyssey podcast, available now on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.